Hey everyone, I'm here with Jodi Kirk, who is a powerlifter, and she's also the founder of CoachVox, the platform that coaches and thought leaders can use to literally make AI clone versions of themselves. God, I'll never feel weird to me. Does it feel weird to you?
It feels less weird to me now, given that I started the company just over a year ago. But I really like things that feel weird at first and then start to feel normal. And that's where I feel like I am with it. But I've started some company that had been like where the industry had been around for absolutely ages, like an accountancy firm. If I'd have started an accountancy firm right now and it didn't feel weird, I think I would be very bored. So I'm actively looking for stuff that sounds scary and getting to know the scariness in a way that it then feels familiar and even then feels normal. So talking about making AI clones actually doesn't feel as weird as it probably should.
Just really quickly, before we begin everything, on a scale of 1 to 10, how safe do you feel like artificial intelligence is? Because Jodi, I've got to be really honest with you. It freaks me out. It's not that I think it's malevolent or demonic or anything like that, just that it is a black box. We don't know where it's going. We don't know what the information about us that we give it does. In my house, I don't have any of the like Amazon Homes, the things that will make your life a little easier. I had like a smart temperature check thermometer. God, this is embarrassing. I really don't know anything. I had it and it was like reporting data on me to the company and it wasn't anything to improve my home. So I turned that off. I don't know. Point is, sharing information about myself with third party entities, especially artificial intelligence based ones, it freaks me out. What's your viewpoint on this?
I'm very agreed with you on a personal level for sure. Things that listen to you the whole time. I have no idea actually what this Airbnb has, but I normally turn everything off as much as I can. I think that there's a massive difference between your personal life and your professional life. What I wouldn't want to happen is that someone is so scared of everything in their personal life. And so what we do at CoachVox and with our creators who make the AI versions of themselves is we're like, use AI in your professional life because it can help clone you. It can help other people because your words, your wisdom is going into a model that then other people can chat with. But by all means, keep your personal life as private as you want to. People who have created books and podcasts and they've put themselves out there, like you're putting yourself out there with a podcast. So you've got like a professional side to you that you do want shared as far as possible. But then the personal side that's like, yeah, keep it private. When people set up their clones, we say to them, decide whether this is you or whether this is an AI version of you. For example, if someone says to Jodi AI, what are you wearing? It will say, I'm an AI version of Jodi. I'm not actually Jodi. I don't have a physical body. Stop asking me questions, you weirdo. Let's just get back to business. I'm very adamant that it's not me. It's not me personally. It's just me professionally. So maybe separating out those two things might help make it a bit less scary in your head.
So Jodi AI is not a love bot. Can you see what people ask Jodi AI? So when I was testing it for an interview, you can just see everything I type. You can see all the stuff I typed in the questions.
Yes, I can. I've not looked, but I'm looking forward to looking now. Yeah, you can see everything. So you can see who has spoken to your AI in terms of their email address, their name. You can see summaries and transcripts of every conversation. And that's because coaches use it. So they'll be finding out what people in their audience and what their clients want and what their challenges are. So I'm excited to find out yours, Paige.
Just to clarify, I just asked, I was like, what should I make for dinner? I was just asking like semi-personal questions. And I also used a fake name. So good luck finding me. All right. Let's just set the stage for my listeners. What exactly is CoachVox AI? How would you describe it? And why did you build it?
Do you remember where you were when ChatGPT first came out? Because I 100% do. So my geek friend who tells me about things, sometimes it feels like before they happen. And he sent me a message in November 2022 and said, oh my goodness, you need to check out OpenAI's new chat. And I was like, okay. Went on the internet, typed in that URL to go and check it out, and pretty much just started typing things in, messing around, not really knowing what to say to it, but just started talking to it. And so I thought I'd test it. So I asked ChatGPT to write me a blog post. I gave it the headline of a blog post I had already written, and I gave it the subheadlines that were also in the blog post I'd already written. So I said, create me this blog post from scratch, knowing full well that I'd already written one just like it. I clicked submit, and then this little chat interface started chatting to me. And what I noticed was my words were coming up on the screen, so I could recognize phrases and sentences that I'd used in my original post. And at first I was like, oh, cool, it's writing me a blog post. This chatbot is writing me a blog post. And then I was like, hey, these are my words. It doesn't like, what? How is this in here? How is this in here? This just means that other people could do this exact thing. They could type in these questions and they could get my words as well. And something about that didn't seem right. It didn't seem fair. Because if you think about the bigger picture of that, any artist, any writer who's ever written anyone has got all their words inside ChatGPT. And I since found out it's trained on 300 billion words. And so this sparked a big thinking process of how this is going to play out in the future. And given that I was in between businesses because I just sold a social media agency like about a year before, I was thinking about new businesses to start. And it just felt like there was something in this that meant that creators and people who had content needed to have someone on their side almost. So that was the very start of CoachVox. And CoachVox already existed, but as a different tool. Then once this happened, and the day that ChatGPT, I don't think I even got dressed. I don't think I ate the whole day. I think I was just playing around with this new crazy thing, figuring out how can I use this. So since then, it's been built into a tool that means that any creator who's got unique, original content that helps people can go onto our CoachVox platform, upload their content, explain their coaching or mentoring style in our platform, and create an AI clone of them that then they release to their audience who can get help from engaging with it. And going back to the ChatGPT is stealing your content, we created this to help creators steal it back.
Very interesting. ChatGPT has just taken everybody's words and is using them. I mean, Midjourney's taken everybody's art and using it. How does that make you feel?
I guess it makes me feel like something's not right. It's up to individuals to do something about it. So I always think like it's using AI rather than letting AI use you. So our platform uses OpenAI technology. Like we integrate with OpenAI through their API. So it's not like we don't use it, but at the same time, we've got this real focus on safeguarding or separating or putting a fence around people's own original content to the point that they benefit from it and it's not shared with everyone else. So I just think there are right and wrong ways of doing it. I think that OpenAI is growing so fast that they probably don't really realize what they've actually created, and they're probably backpedaling to figure out how they do credit creators for their work. But I feel like that's where we come in. It makes me feel like there's opportunity, and it makes me feel like there needs to be a voice for creators. But aside from that, the cogs in my brain that are whirring are all saying, how can we use this rather than like, oh, let's just get mad about it.
Productive, because I don't know if we'll really ultimately have a choice. It's here. Kind of reminded of when television started going on the internet. A bunch of cable companies were trying to prevent people from downloading TV shows to watch on the internet. Can't undo it. Pandora's box. Only in this case, it's with our thoughts and our feelings and our livelihoods. I have some maintenance questions. You talked about what CoachVox AI does, which is to make clones of thought leaders, influencers. Who are your clients? Do you have any clients outside of that?
Our clients are all pretty much thought leaders with content. Lots of them are coaches. Outside of that, they are people who want to remember and apply their own principles. One that springs to mind is an investor, and he has his rules for investing. And whenever he makes a new investment, he doesn't want to go outside of those rules. So he taught his AI his rules for investing, and now he runs new decisions by his AI clone, almost like to keep him on track. So for him, it's like journaling with the best, most on-track version of him. But that's a very fringe use case. Mainly, it's coaches who use it to support their clients outside coaching sessions, or it's thought leaders who want to basically collect email addresses and collect information and know how to create more content that appeals to the people who they know in their target audience. So it's like a lead generation tool. Some people, I find this actually really wild and still I'm getting my head around it, but some people charge for access access to the AI version of them. So it's people who have uploaded all their content, trained the AI to coach in their style, but then they're charging between $9 and $46 a month for access to the AI version of them, and people are paying it. So they've done all the work already because they've created their content, then they upload it, then they pretty much don't have to do anything else, and the AI clone is working on their behalf to help their clients. That to me seems wild. And we didn't even build that feature at first because we thought the world was not ready to pay for AI coaching. But apparently it is.
Two things. So someone essentially built an AI Jiminy Cricket of themselves. It's like a moral compass that they can go ask questions like, what should I do in this case? Do you read what they ask the AI? I feel like that one would be really interesting. What is it? Is it like, what should I get my wife for Christmas? Or are they all business related?
I don't know. We as Coach Fox don't look at anyone else's stuff like that. Maybe he does ask what he should buy his wife for Christmas, but I think it's mainly about investment decisions. And I quite like that. I love the idea that over time he can see how well he stuck to his decisions and then how consistently he acted and then how the results of that happened over time. I do actually quite love the idea that in 10 years he could look back at his AI. He could look at that question that he asked and what it recommended he should do. And then he could see how much money he'd made since then. That's actually quite cool. But I don't know. Unfortunately, we don't look at what other creators' clients are saying to their AIs.
What is the most someone has charged for access, and have they made that money?
The most I've actually seen is $46 a month. And it was $46 a month because it included a community. So they put all the clients of their AI into a Slack channel together. And so they can get the AI for help with marketing because it was an AI marketing coach, but all their clients can talk to each other as well. And the original creator is in the Slack channel as well, but it's his AI that's doing the heavy lifting, that's speaking, that's spending all the time. But it's the original creator that's getting all the credit. I kind of find that fascinating as well, because even though people know it's an AI, there's no secret to that. We don't pretend it's a real person, but you're still developing this affinity and this familiarity towards the real human, even though you know it's an AI version of them, which is kind of nuts because the AI is speaking to you like a coach. So it's not like, hey, this is me, I'm Rick, I'll tell you all about me, like it might be in his book or podcast maybe. It's very like, tell me about you, what are your problems, what are your challenges? So someone is more journaling with an AI than reading a book, and you get way more out of it because of that. But Rick's getting all the credit, and the creators are getting all the credit for the conversations that their AI is having. We had an inquiry not that long ago from someone who said, I'm a teacher. I want to make an AI version of me. But when I release it, I know that on your program, it says AI at the top of the chat, but can it not say AI? And I know that in your program, the responses get sent straight away, but can you put them on random delay intervals instead? From a back and forth of conversations, we realized that what she wanted was to pretend that the AI was actually her so that she could teach her students, but have it not really be her, but have them believe that it was. And we don't make that. But at some point, the technology is going to be so good that you really, really won't know it's not a person. And then that is when it gets scary, because you believe that you're asking a teacher or a coach to coach you, and it's actually an AI.
What if it possibly went wrong in this case study?
You know, I don't know actually about things necessarily going wrong. It's more about a kind of honesty thing. I do not have a problem with AI generated anything, really. I just like that people know it's AI. I don't like the deception side of it. So I know what we make. I know that the AI coaches that we make are really good and they're really effective, but I feel like I draw the line at pretending that it's the real person. You see it happening at the moment with LinkedIn comments, because so many LinkedIn comments are AI generated. And I always want there to be a mark on it to say, oh, this is AI generated. Like, yeah, it's not actually me. It's the style of me, but it's just an AI generated comment. I feel like that honesty would be really, really good. So what this is kind of similar to is I compete in powerlifting and I compete in a drugs tested federation, but there are also non-drugs tested federations. And I really like the idea that if you're in my federation, you're drugs tested, you're not on steroids, and that's what you do. If you're in the other federation, you can do whatever the hell you want, and that's fine. But we don't have that at the moment with AI generated stuff. It's just everyone's all in together. Some people are pretending it's not AI and some people are open about it being AI. That's the side that I feel the most unease with, not necessarily what the AI might come out with, because I think it's down to the user of the AI to follow their own common sense with what advice they take forward and what they don't, given that they know that it's an AI talking to them.
So speaking of knowing that someone is an AI or knowing that AI is talking to them, people are putting their thoughts and their words and the AI is replicating what the person might have said as best as it can. What do you have planned for when, let's say, the AI says something that is not aligned with what your client wants?
When our creators set up their AI, we very much recommend that they have disclaimers to say, look, this is an AI. They've been known to make stuff up. Exercise due caution. We don't take any responsibility for the stuff that it comes out with. You have to realize that you're not talking to a real person. You're talking to an AI representation of the real person. I think that's really important. Something quite interesting happened not that long ago. And it was, I think it was Air Canada. And they had one of their AI chatbots. They said that they would give a reduced fare to someone who asked their chatbot for one of them. And it was just completely hallucinated. It just came out with, yeah, of course you can have a reduced fare, but not necessarily based on what the airline actually wanted to do. And so this person bought their ticket and then got in touch to say, can I now have my discount or can I now have my reduced fare? Like, will you honor this? And they said, no, we won't. So that person then took Air Canada to court and the court ruled that Air Canada had to honor the discount. So that's an example of where someone's AI could hallucinate a coupon code or hallucinate a discount or hallucinate something. And the law in that case ruled that they had to stick to it, which seems crazy given that AIs are known to make stuff up. So I would say that it's not necessarily the responsibility of the person who's trained the AI to control it because you can't in many cases, but I think it's definitely the responsibility of the user, of the client, to use it as they would any advice. Even if a person gave you advice, you wouldn't just follow it blindly. So I don't think following the advice that an AI gives you blindly is the right thing to do either. Ultimately, everything has to come down to personal responsibility, personal ownership, and following your own common sense, even if you know that you're getting advice from someone you trust or getting advice from the AI of someone you trust, or even if you're paying for it, I think it still comes down to what's the right decision for me to make based on my own reason choice. Like, I don't think we should give that away to AI or any other person or anything else at all.
There's a case where this guy bought the car. Okay, I'm pretty sure it was Australia. He turned on the car and he went inside to go make his breakfast and get coffee. And he was inside for 30 minutes while the car was running and didn't drive. So the car pottering about without him. And it either, I forget what it was, it either crashed into a tree or it drove itself off a cliff. It's a real thing you can look up. I will link it in the show notes because it's so unbelievable. He sued the company that made the car and he won because they did not include you have to be in the car while in drive mode. People sue for all sorts of things and win on technicalities. You can have disclaimers on your AI, but if you're getting investment advice from someone and you're paying for it, like you're paying an AI money to give you investment advice, I would imagine someone could have a case if the AI bot they are paying gives them bad advice. Like, what if you're getting tax advice from someone, they give you bad advice and you lose money from it, or you make an investment? They might be legally obligated. How are you preparing for this? Is this something that's crossed your mind? Looking at your face now, it's clearly crossing your mind right now. Tell me, what do you think?
I was actually just thinking that the investor who's got their CoachVox AI set up, they only use it to advise themselves. So I really quite enjoy the idea that someone trains an AI on their own methods and then they follow their own methods and then they try and sue the AI version of them. I mean, yeah, it probably could happen. Most of the people who set up their CoachVox, when they go in, they decide whether it's going to be more coach or more mentor. And when it's more coach, it asks questions and it helps people get to their truth and the right response based on what is actually already inside them. They're just guided. When the slider, the style slider we call it, is slid to the more mentor side, that is where it's more, you should do this and you should do that. But even then, there's not so much direct advice. It still comes with caveats. It still comes with if it's right for you. It still comes with have you thought about this or have you tried this? And I think there's still a lot of personal responsibility in there.
Yeah, you think it's so funny now. She said it'd be hilarious if he sued himself. I think it's so funny now. Anyway, that's beside the point. Who builds your AI clones and how does that process work?
It's a self-serve platform. People log on and they upload their stuff. We made it really user-friendly. And the idea is that you don't have to code. You don't have to know prompting. You don't have to know anything at all. All you have to do is upload your content. And then our system turns your content and your coaching style into an AI version of you. So we use various different technology. We use a technology stack to put all the stuff together. But what comes out is responses and questions and feedback and conversations with your clients in your style, pretty much. So yeah, it's definitely not super secret, but we don't necessarily share all the workings, mainly because it would confuse people. And I don't want anyone to think that they have to have all this technical knowledge to do this, because you absolutely don't. It's super simple.
So your technology right now is pretty basic, and someone really wanted to, they could create a company like yours. Where do you think the technology is going to go in 5 years? What about 10 years? What if we just have like AI versions of ourselves doing all the interacting? Like Bumble's talking about making AI versions of people's profiles to match with others and test compatibility. What if there was a case where there's like an AI version of me and an AI version of you, and they're having the interview? We've never met each other. I'm at home drinking coffee and hanging out with my dog, and you're powerlifting. So now it's interesting. Tell me, what do you think?
What you just said actually kind of nearly happened. One of our creators got me on his podcast, and before the show, he asked my AI what he should ask me on the podcast episode, and he asked his AI what he should ask me on the podcast episode. So I guess the thing that comes next is that our AIs talk to each other about the kind of questions that would make a good show. And I guess the step that happens after that is that our AIs just talk to each other in order to make the show themselves. I think that would be kind of fascinating. Assuming that you knew it was one AI talking to another AI, I quite like this idea. So if you imagine the person who inspires you the most in the whole world, like dead or alive,
Jackie Kennedy.
So now imagine asking Jackie Kennedy all the questions on everything, on what you should wear today, on what you should eat today, on who your next podcast guest should be, what you should ask them, how you should make your podcast hosting style different to be more assertive or less assertive or whatever, how to show you work harder, how to show you don't work quite as hard. You would ask Jackie Kennedy all those questions and you would get responses in her style. And I think that would be fascinating, because Jackie Kennedy will have given speeches, written stuff down. She'll have essentially created content, but she hasn't created content on every single topic. But combining Jackie Kennedy's stuff that's already out there with AI means it can predict what she would say on other topics. And you could learn a lot. And then you could almost have, you know how people have like, what would Jesus do? They wear what would Jesus do bracelets. You could almost have what would Jackie Kennedy do as an AI, and you could run every life decision by that. I really think that people often don't need to learn new stuff. They just need to be reminded of what they already know, or they need to be reminded to act true to one system or one method. And so if your chosen method is Jackie Kennedy, it would make a lot of sense to run every decision by Jackie Kennedy AI so that you can constantly live in that way that you want to. So I quite like it. What you said, so the Bumble thing is interesting, because this is very similar to a Black Mirror episode that came out maybe, I want to say like 4 years ago. Have you heard of Black Mirror? And there's an episode called Hang the DJ. And Hang the DJ is where they do exactly that. So it's a dating app that runs simulations where it gets people's AI versions to date each other to see how they will like perform, to see if the relationship is going to be a success. Oh, I have so many thoughts about this. So firstly, I think that something that sounds good on paper is not always good on real life. You've probably seen someone who has sounded so good on paper, and then when you've actually met them in real life, or when you've gone on a date with them, it just doesn't quite click and you're not quite sure why. And I guess that's because there's so many more things. There's what you smell like your body language, there's how you actually vibe, there's whether, like, how, I don't know, how tall you are. There's so many things that come into it other than just your features and benefits on paper. But the other side of this is that I think the purpose of using artificial intelligence, especially in work, is so that all the regular, boring, administrative tasks can be taken care of by something else. And that means humans can be free to do their highest leverage work, or to do the stuff that brings them the most joy. Maybe that is hanging out at home with your dog or powerlifting or whatever else. So the idea that you can send your AI on entry-level dates to assess whether someone is right for you is really amazing, because I think people waste a lot of time on entry-level dates that actually don't go anywhere. You might turn up, you know, in the first 10 minutes that it's not going to work out, but you got to sit there for the rest of the hour or hour and a half or however long it takes for you to be polite enough to not be rude. But you don't have to do this anymore because your AI can actually do it for you. And I think that's powerful. And I think that's a really good, ultimately, that's a net positive outcome. So I'm pretty much all for testing out the AI versions of us, seeing what they can do, as long as in the meantime, while your AI is saving you all that work, you're doing something other than just like nothing, scrolling a newsfeed, using that time to do your most magic, unique, superpower work is really the premise of it and really what makes it so amazing and game changing.
I found a book on artificial intelligence and machine learning a little bit ago. And there's a part in it that I found very interesting, which is that if we have automatic machines, we sometimes will forget how to do the process itself. That seemed really absurd to me, the idea that someone would not know how to wash dishes because of a dishwasher. And then I met some people in real life who did, in fact, not know how to properly wash a dish. Of course, that's something that doesn't take you that long to learn, but this can be expanded into other things, right? I think all of this stuff seems so common sense. And then I meet young children, you know, 6 to 10, who have not had to do certain things because of artificial intelligence, and they forget how. Okay, calculating the tip, something that most people over the age of 30 know how to do in their heads, or honestly probably should know how to do in their heads. If you're over 30 and you don't, what were you doing when you were in elementary school? Come on. A lot of kids today don't know how because they just use the calculator app, right? Like that basic mental math they're not used to anymore. Do you feel like if we have AI outsourcing these basic entry-level tasks, having small talk, having a conversation with someone for the first time, just doing these things, if we outsource them, do you think there's a danger of us just forgetting how to do them?
Yes, but that might be a good thing. I feel like every generation has got these tasks that it thinks that the generations that go after them should know how to do. And I think it's kind of all oh, you can beat that out. At some point, there's someone older than us who would be like, oh, I can't believe you don't know how to wire a plug, or, oh, I can't believe you don't know how to grout your tiles, or can't believe you don't know how to do this. And it's exactly the same as someone our age saying, oh, I can't believe you don't know how to calculate a tip, or can't believe you don't know how to do this. And really, it's like, well, I don't need to do it anymore, so why would I do it manually? I think that this is honestly the power, because I don't want to wash my dishes. I don't want to do anything that I don't have to do, because I want to spend all my time doing powerlifting and running my business. And it's not like we're going to live forever. Spending your time doing the stuff that only you can do is what I feel like all of us should be aspiring to do. And if that means that I don't do my own cooking, fine, I'm totally okay with that. And if that means that someone who's older than me can say, oh, I can't believe you don't know how to make a spaghetti bolognese. Like, fine, I'm okay with that. So it's a really, really good thing. Like, we should be proud of freeing ourselves from mundane stuff in order to do the stuff that only we can do, because there is just no pride in doing something that a machine can do. I think it's happened with every single invention that's come out. Like, when the dishwasher first came out, it was like, some people would be like, oh, I'm not going to use that. I'm going to wash my own dishes. But it's like, well, you're stupid then, because you're wasting all your time when you could be spending it doing something else that's better, that brings you more joy, that creates a lasting impact for way more people. And that's what you should be doing. So I feel pretty good about machines doing all the stuff. And I don't think it's a bad thing at all if that means we don't know how to do the stuff that all the older generations think we should do. Let's move more towards only doing what we're uniquely placed on earth to do, whatever that might be. And if we can give all our stuff to machines, then it means that we have a far better chance of finding that out.
Very interesting. It made me think of something. Most Americans drive automatic. They don't drive manual. They don't drive stick. You go to another country and you drive it stick. And if you don't know how to drive stick, you're dependent on someone else who knows how to drive stick. You traveled abroad and you stayed with a friend. You didn't know how to drive stick. Maybe they had to drive you around like a parent driving their kid to soccer practice. I don't know. This has never happened to me in my life, ever. If we become dependent on machines to do things for us, it might save some time for us to do quote unquote higher leverage work, which I'm going to ask you about. But it also puts us in the position of being dependent on machines. So much so that, you know, if we are suddenly without something like an automatic car, we're just not going to be able to go places. It seems ridiculous now to say, oh, well, if someone doesn't have a dishwasher, they're going to have to wash dishes. It's like you've got to pick up a bunch of skills suddenly that you've never learned. And you also don't have practice in how to pick up these basic skills. What do you think about this?
I guess I'm just always of the ethos, I'll figure it out. And I feel like that's the same. If someone's only driven an automatic car and then they have to go and use a manual car, they'll just work it out because it's not actually that hard. And if someone only microwaves meals, or if they only have a chef cook for them and then they have to figure out how to make a meal, it's like, it's not that hard. It's not like you need to be a Michelin chef level cook to sustain yourself. You only need to make a few basic things. And at any given time, you could ask someone and they could tell you. At any given time, you could go onto YouTube and you could watch just one tutorial of how to make a whatever basic meal. It's almost like continuing to do those tasks that maybe don't bring you joy and maybe don't use all your superpowers, just to remember how to do it in case it ever gets taken away from you. Feels like just a complete waste of time, given that you can just always learn at some point in the future. I feel like I'd rather spend the time building my business and then just hire a chef. And then if I ever lose my business and then don't have a chef, then I'll just figure out how to do the cooking myself. For example, we can always pick it up. What you said about will we stop learning how to learn is really interesting. It's a real skill to learn how to do something. And then once you learn how to do one thing, like once you master one area of anything, I think that you can apply it to others and then you can master other areas. So if we lose that skill, will that cost us and is that scary? But then really, lots of people who are growing up with technology are learning technology, and therefore they are mastering something, and therefore they could master how to fry an egg or drive a manual car at some point in the future because they've learned something that is arguably far harder. So it's not that just because we don't know how to wire a plug, it doesn't mean that we couldn't figure out how to make our own food, because we've actually learned how to, I don't know, show up on social media, train an AI, do all this other stuff that is equally transferable. It's just transferable in a different way to generations who've gone before us. So I feel less scared about it. I don't think I feel scared about it at all. I think that what happens is we'll always adapt and we'll always change and we'll always figure out how to do the stuff that we need to do when it's required of us. And I'm okay with that.
So when we talk about high leverage work and making time for high leverage work, you're a very entrepreneurial, successful businesswoman, know how to use your time well. Jodi, honestly, I feel like when people outsource some of these tasks, it's not like they're at home making businesses. They are watching television or scrolling TikTok. I just have noticed there's this huge push now for people to get things in the fastest way possible. It's like suddenly such an inconvenience to have to wait 15 minutes for something. If you'll notice, I feel like I see people get really angry when they're in commutes. I've had quite a few people tell me, Paige, your podcasts are too long. You should make them shorter. Shorter for what? What are you doing with all this extra time? I feel like people now see time as the most valuable thing they have. And it's true, it is. I don't always think it's so good. Big impetus for people to do things the fastest way possible. And they don't really care about the quality. I cannot imagine what it is like to be in school right now with ChatGPT and all the standardized tasks. But I don't know, I can't help but feel like we are losing something, what it means to be human and to be an individual and to create things. What do you think about that?
Some friends recently were talking about hiring a nanny, and they were talking about holding interviews, like how they would test, how they would run trials, how they would find the right nanny. And they asked me what I thought. And I said, why are you hiring a nanny? What are you going to do with the time that the nanny saves you? And they thought about it. And they were like, I guess we're going to cook. We're going to make the house nice. We're going to clean up. We're going to do all the little things that we can't do when we're looking after the kids. And I was like, okay, so how do you want to spend your time? What do you want to do? And they were like, well, we really just want to spend time together as a family. And it's like, why are you outsourcing spending time together as a family? Why are you hiring a nanny? Why don't you instead hire a chef and a cleaner? Because then they can do all the admin and then you can just spend time with your kids, not having to think about cooking and cleaning. So much of this requires just thinking around what you're outsourcing, why you're outsourcing, and what it's freeing up your time to do. Because yeah, like you said, if you're just outsourcing something to someone to then just sit at home and scroll on TikTok, and that's not actually what you want to spend your time doing, you've just double wasted time because you've wasted your time and you've wasted someone else's time. But if you're truly giving someone something that that utilizes their superpowers that gives you time to utilize yours, then I think it's a fantastic use of time. And when I'm thinking about productivity, I'm not always thinking of it in terms of giving other people stuff to do so that I can just do more work. A lot of it is to create space to think and have the blank space to just play and go see new places and explore new things and chat to new people, because that's all the stuff that gives you ideas, which you then can go and decide what to do with. So there's no right or wrong answer. I feel like it's just being intentional about what you're saving time to do. So there's a phrase, freedom from what to do what. And that's the decision to think about first before you use AI or technology or automation or anything at all.
What if someone makes themselves obsolete using your platform? You know, what if someone makes a thought leader coach and turns out that thought leader version of themselves is more pleasant to talk to? You know, they never have a bad day. Okay, I'm going to be real with you about something. Do you remember how when I came in, you were like, oh, where's your coffee page? I dropped it on the way driving because I was in a rush. Probably should admit that, but I'm just sharing that. Like, for the first 5 minutes, I was like, I can't believe I did that. I'm an idiot. I don't have time to go back and make another one. Thanks for the coffee, Jody. The thought leader version of you is never going to have a morning like that. And for me, all of my mornings are kind of like that. Thought leader version of you, they're never going to have a morning like that. They are always going to be great, perfect, fun to be around. What do you think is going to happen to someone's brain if people prefer the AI version of themselves to who they truly are?
This is so interesting. I would actually really love to make Paige AI and talk to it about all the things that...
Oh, I don't want to put my soul in the artificial intelligence machine. It's going to steal. I thought about, like, when we were talking about, like, who we're going to clone. I was like, what if we clone myself? And if we clone myself, you ask it questions, it would just be like, oh, I don't know, you should probably eat a muffin or maybe go outside or why don't you read a book? That's basically all Paige AI would say. Probably also send pictures of dogs to people. Someone would be like, Paige AI, I'm having a bad day. I'd be like, oh, have you seen this puppy? That's what Paige AI would be.
So maybe leave a note in the comments if you think that Paige AI should happen and if actually you would quite like an AI companion that can tell you to go eat a muffin or go and play outside or send you pictures of dogs and we could make that happen. But it's a very good question because the AI version of you is everything that you could only dream of being because they have infinite patience. They're available 24/7. They're always going to be focused on the other person. They don't care about telling you their story. They only care about hearing yours. They don't get angry. There's nothing wrong with them. They're not flawed because they're an AI version. And the real version is messy. It drops things. It's confused. It loses their train of thoughts. All this stuff happens. So they're very different entities, but we're definitely not creating AIs that are going to replace coaches and thought leaders. They're only using them to supplement. Like, they're using them to help people get closer and more familiar with their ethos and their mission and their values. Just like if you read someone's book, you wouldn't expect to read their book and it be full of typos because they'd have proofed it first. That's almost like how you think of the AI version of them. But I think if an AI version of a person could give a better experience than the real thing, that would be pretty cool because the AI version of them is infinitely scalable on a one-to-one basis. So you as a human can't have infinite conversations with an infinite number of people on a one-to-one basis at any given time. Like, you just can't. You're stuck by the number of hours you have in the day. But most of the people who upload their stuff to our platform, they have methods, they have frameworks, they have stuff that they know can help people, but they're limited by time. So they do want this way of scaling themselves to infinity. So I think it's really powerful. I feel like the benefits far outweigh the cons. I feel like this in the hands of the wrong person. So imagine like a really evil dictator, horrible, like everything's bad type person cloning themselves and getting all their clients and infiltrating lots of people's brains with all these horrible messages. But with the nice people that we've got involved, that's just not going to happen. All they're doing is sharing their wisdom to help people. That's probably the thing that ties everyone together the most. They've got this belief that what they can share can make a difference. And therefore, if that can also help them grow the business, then it's only a good thing.
Somebody says we're going to make Paige AI. Okay, don't think we will. But you know what, movie? Like, I would do it if you could fuse me with Jackie Kennedy. I would do it if you were like the robot page. It was really Jackie Kennedy and not me. So that way when people Googled me, they would associate me with Jackie Kennedy. You know, there's this movie, Parker Posey plays this woman that's obsessed with Jackie Kennedy and dresses like Jackie Kennedy. And I watched it and I was freaked out by it. But not like that. Just really like her style. You know what? Yeah, Jody, I would do it if you made an AI version of me that was fused with Jackie Kennedy. Can you do that? Can you just clone historical figures? What permissions do you need to get from people to do that?
We don't clone historical figures. We only clone people who upload their content. This is how you use your content without just AI platforms using it. We want to give people ownership of their own stuff. So we wouldn't take someone else's stuff to create a clone. We want them to take their own stuff, put it in our platform, have it ring-fenced, safeguarded, protected by us, and use that to get the benefit from them. So in theory, we could, but that's not the purpose of the platform. So yeah, no Jackie Kennedy, unfortunately, but we could definitely make yours.
Yeah, jury's out on there. At the time of this interview, we have three people who are willing to be cloned, or who want to be cloned, not willing. Most people are really excited about it. They're all CEOs, and they're all very busy people who would like to free up their schedules a bit. So, have you read the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
I have not read the book, but since you told me about it, I have read the Wikipedia summary. So I know about it.
No, that's the kind of ethos we were talking about earlier. It's like people aren't reading books, they're reading summaries. I'll never forget this. Do you know one time I went on a date with someone? I was like 21. I was using dating apps for the first time and I just matched with this guy. And he was like, do you want to go to dinner? And I was like, sure. We had a conversation about books for literally 2 hours. And at the end of the conversation, he reveals he's never read any of the books, just the spark notes. To me, that felt just so disingenuous. So, not trying to sass you. When I first told her about that book, she read the... It was like a month ago, right? It was yesterday. Oh, God. Wow. Time flies. Okay. So she didn't read the book. Wow, I feel like a jerk now. What did I do? Did I ruin our cadence? Are you not going to tell me that I just asked you about not reading a book? It's a pretty short book, though, and it's worth reading. So I would recommend it to anyone. In this book, one of the characters sees that these androids, they have no human warmth or feeling. While they're efficient, he feels like they are lacking some sort of essential element of humanity. He feels you can very clearly tell they're not human. However, there's another character and he does not see or feel a difference between what is real and what is robotic. And he feels sympathy towards them. So in the book, if you are turning off these androids, some people are able to do it no problem. Other people feel sadness or empathy towards them. Like, oh, I have a connection with them. They're real. Personally, my belief is we should not feel sympathy towards AI because it's not real. Mentioned this in an episode I did with an AI expert. We were talking about, I have looked forever for this study. I cannot find it. At MIT, a bunch of researchers got Furbies and had kids play with the Furbies. And the Furbies were all trained to say, ow, you are hurting me, whenever the kids picked them up. The kids all immediately dropped them. There were no children that held onto the Furby that said, ow, you are hurting me. What they were showing was, it is very easy for machines to manipulate humans. Got some questions about, you know, the difference between human coaches and real coaches, but do you ever worry that your AI coaches are going to be able to manipulate people? You don't know where this technology is headed. Do you feel any kind of responsibility towards that? Leading question, do you think? It's like, sure, this is all this stuff I think about AI. God, I don't have such a strong reaction to it. We could talk about that. We can explore that. But tell me, what do you think about this?
Think of it in the same way as training your fridge or your toaster to have empathy. So if you open the Hayden just looked at me with the widest eyes. So imagine if when you open your fridge door, your fridge said, no, close it. All the food's getting warm. You would close it straight away, right? Like dropping the Furby.
No, I'd be like, oh my God, what's this brave little toaster? Like, why are my appliances talking to me? That's how it would feel.
Yeah, but it would feel comical because you'd be like, this is not real. This is a machine. This is talking to me and it's trying to get me to do something. But duh, it's a machine. That's how we should think about AI. Some people have talked about, should you say please and thank you to ChatGPT? And the idea is, would you say please and thank you to your toaster? And if you're the kind of person who would say please and thank you to your toaster, then by all means, carry on doing that because that's just how you talk to machines. But if that sounds crazy because AI is just a tool, it's not a human, then proceed on that line of thinking and then you'll probably be fine. I think this all comes down to personal agency. Are you going to outsource all your decisions to an AI coach? No. Are you going to use it as a tool to make better decisions? Yes, but there's such a difference between those two things.
I have nightmares now, my fridge talking to me. Thanks, Jody. Oh my God. I open my fridge and it's so bad. I move out of my house and I just never go back, ever. So when you talk about people making better decisions, right? We're talking about Bumble and AI versions of us going on dates with AI versions of us. We can optimize all we want and say that machines are making decisions for us all we want. And I would agree, actually, that humans are very predictable. If you say someone's going to make this decision based on past decisions, likelihood that they'll make that decision is really high. it's really, really high. And, you know, we think about AI versions of us making decisions that we would make and showing us the impact of them. Probably going to be true, probably going to have better results. But there is a part of me, and I think there will always be a part of me, that would just wonder, am I missing out on something really great? Is there something slipping through the cracks? That's how I would feel. What do you think about that? And do you ever feel that way?
It reminds me of when I was younger. There used to be this property TV show, and it would be helping people to find their dream property. And the host would show this couple three houses that it thought fit their budget, fit their vibe, fit what they wanted. And they would go around and look. And then the host would say, and now there's a wild card. And that would be a property that on paper they didn't match with at all. But there was just something about it, something really, really small that made them think this property could be exactly what they're looking for. And I wonder if that could be applied to things like dating apps or even things like AI coaches. But the idea that you might not want to just be matched with the people who it thinks you'll be compatible with, you might want something completely different. And I think if everything is optimized, like you said, it maybe does remove that magic and it maybe does remove that potential for the unknown. We almost maybe need a wildcard option to stop technology making all the decisions for us and guiding us down a path of predictability. So I completely agree, Paige, that predictability is not always the best thing ever because it reduces the unknown, and the unknown can hold magic as well.
Do you feel like the magic of life is taken out in some way when we do this? Just the idea, like, okay, you're mentoring someone, seeing them learn something for the first time can be very rewarding. The experience of going on a series of really awful dates can make the moment you find someone you love that much more wonderful. Actually, I have a friend who, she's probably comfortable with me talking about this, I'm not naming her. For like 10 straight years, she would just go out with the worst men. I didn't even know how she found them. It's very beautiful, very kind person, and she's very sensitive, and she just got these awful, 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 awful guys. Remember her coming over to my house, she was like so down in the dumps about something. She's sobbing, she's like, I'm never gonna find anybody. 3 months later, she met the love of her life through mutual friends, and she's just been so happy. Now she can look and say, wow, I appreciate him so much more, and I value our relationship so much more because I had all of those bad experiences. If someone does not have all of those bad experiences, whatever they're getting through AI, be it a great match or very effective mentored people, successful business matches, whatever, very effective business coaching, do you feel like, Gwen, are they going to value it less? And two, is there any part of the human experience that gets taken away because of it?
I think this all comes down to how you want to spend your time. If you are an ambitious professional that wants to add as much value to as many people as possible with the content you've already created, does it matter all the experiences that you might have doing stuff that's beneath your potential or administrative just because someone believes that you should have the experience? So for example, if you didn't cook your own meal, does that mean that you enjoy the taste of it less because you didn't experience creating it? Maybe there's like a romantic notion that when you make the food for yourself, it tastes better, but really it doesn't. That's not true at all. It's just that it's what someone believes and it's what someone doesn't believe, and that's fine. There's nothing to say that to get the good stuff, we have to do all the bad stuff. There's nothing to say that you have to kiss a load of frog to appreciate the prince. There's nothing to say that you have to put yourself through that. It's almost like this bias that we believe that stuff has to be hard, or we believe that it has to be a struggle, but really that doesn't have to be the way. So what if we just thought, I can have everything I want, I can achieve everything I want, I can make the absolute most of all my time, and that doesn't mean working all the time, that doesn't mean being productive all the time, that might mean I want to spend 3 hours a day just staring out the window and thinking and hanging out in coffee shops and doing whatever, like doing whatever we want to do because something else has freed up the other time. I think that's absolutely fine. There's nothing to say that we need to have the struggle, the hard work, the experience, anything at all. I think that the friend that you described, I feel like everyone's got a friend who's done that, who's had those series of bad dates and then has eventually met the love of their life because they've been on all these bad dates and then they eventually found them. The friend that I've got in mind who did exactly this, she wrote a blog about it and she started a thing that was like all the bad dates that she'd been on, and each one turned into a hilarious story. She actually did a few stand-up shows, like stand-up comedy shows based on that material that she got from those bad dates. And in that case, that experience then becomes part of her art, which is quite cool. But if it's not the case, if you've got loads of stuff that you'd rather be doing than going on bad dates, then the idea that your AI could go on a date, run some simulations and find out the person who's just completely right for you, I would take that all day, every day. I think that the idea of kissing lots of frogs to find a prince would be replaced by the stories and the coolness that came from your AI doing it for you to enable you to find your perfect match. I feel like you'd just replace the stories and it would still be just as good and you'd still have the same result, but without having wasted a load of time.
I've got some questions about that, but I just, you know, have some questions about you and so I ask them. Don't think too hard about it. Just whatever your gut says. Do you believe in free will?
Yeah.
Do you believe in determinism?
Please, can you define that?
So the difference between free will and determinism is that if we have free will, we are the agents of our own decision. People who believe in determinism believe that all decisions that we make are highly predictable based on our past experiences, the way we were raised, et cetera, et cetera. It's been a while since I've taken philosophy, but that was just a huge debate. My philosophy professor did not like me very much. You would believe that. Something about too many questions. What do you think about that? On a scale, which one are you more in favor of? The idea that the decisions we make, you know, can be total wild cards or that they're just predictable. And there's no right or wrong.
First of all, I love the idea that a philosophy professor would not like you asking questions. That feels like the absolute opposite to what a good philosophy professor should be. You would want all the questions because all the questions lead to all the answers. That's kind of the point of it. I don't know exactly if I believe more free will or determinism. I believe that what you should believe should be what's the most useful to you. So I quite like believing that things are preordained. I quite like believing that there's a destiny element in what I'm doing because it just helps me. I think it probably helps me show up. It helps me not overthink. It helps me just show up as the best, highest energy version of me, believing that I'm somehow being guided. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it almost doesn't matter. So I choose to just believe that because it's useful, not necessarily because it's true.
What do you think your destiny is? I was snickering about this. Yeah, what was your destiny? Laughing at your destiny. Disney movie, Jodie, come on.
That's so funny. Disney movies are all about finding love, right? And then at the end, it's like the female protagonist finds a male and he rescues her and then she lives happily ever after. So hopefully my destiny isn't just a Disney movie because that's not everything. I wonder why I was laughing when you said, what's your destiny? I think it's partly because I don't know if it almost feels so big that it feels scary sharing on a podcast. You know, if you've got such big dreams for yourself that if you say them out loud, then I don't think I'm worried about what people will think. I think it's more like they feel so big that lots of people wouldn't necessarily believe them. And because I believe them so strongly, I'm almost like, well, I don't care if you don't believe them because I believe them. I think it's because I really like this idea of odds being stacked against you and then you figuring out a way to somehow play the ace cards that you definitely do have, you just don't know you have them, to overcome odds and then to do stuff that everyone thought wasn't possible and maybe even you thought wasn't possible. And then along that way to achieving those, I'm sharing the journey. So I quite like the idea of handing out ace cards to the former version of myself to help people who are a few steps behind because they're just at a different point in their journey, to then mean that they can find their ace cards faster. So there's something in that that feels like my destiny. So that's what I'm just working towards the whole time. What's your destiny? Oh no, I'm not allowed to ask you questions, but what's your destiny?
Ruler of a small country. Thank you for asking.
That sounds very doable. And it sounds like you already know. And the sooner you know, the sooner that you can just live as if it's true. And therefore, believing in determinism compared to free will might suit you quite a lot. Because if you were like, this is it, this is my destiny. I've been put on this planet to do this one thing. And therefore, I just need to do it. I think it would serve you so well because it would mean that you wouldn't give up. So I've got a column in Forbes a lot of the time write about AI, but I also have interviewed a lot of successful people. And successful can mean anything because success is defined by someone's own version rather than someone else's. But they disagree on everything. For everyone who's like, oh, you should wake up at 5 a.m. and do this. Another one's like, oh, wake up at 11 a.m. and do that. They don't agree on anything. But the one thing that everyone does agree on is to not give up. And I think feeling like you know your destiny will just help you not give up, which then means that you can be successful.
Very interesting. Very great answer. Do you like this business? Is this your ticket? Do you feel like this is the way to do it?
Yeah, I think so. Because I feel like it's my destiny, I feel like I'm working on it all the time. And therefore, it makes life and work feel more like a game than a real struggle, which then means that you can find the joy in doing the everyday stuff, which then means that you're more likely to make it happen. That's also why I'm so keen to not do stuff that's below my superpower potential. Because if something's a waste of energy or a waste of time, It's not just that you're wasting that energy or time, it's that it's costing you your destiny at the same time. So yeah, I think about that quite a lot. But yeah, it's all possible. There's a quote I really love and I have it written down in lots of places, and it's, all that is possible for me. And I'll tell people about it all the time, because you'll hear people saying, oh, someone else has done this, and oh man, they got there first, and they're so much better than me, and they're more smart or whatever, whatever. And really the message is, if it's possible for them, it's possible for you. And if you think with that ethos in mind, you never feel jealous of anyone. You never feel like you've got something to prove. You always just feel like you're there learning from other people, and they're all helping you reach your destiny, whatever that might be. So I feel like the first step is you define it, and then you believe like it's already happened or it's coming true. And then you find the game in getting there.
I am someone who wastes a lot of time. I really do. I'm always doing things that are inefficient. I listen to my podcast when I edit probably like 100 times more than I need to. I really value the perfection of doing things, the final polish. I love to take my time to make sure things are really good. This does hinder me in some ways from producing more. What do you think about that? And how do you land on the maximum efficiency to the making sure things are intricate and beautiful?
That makes perfect sense, because this is your podcast. So this is your art. So for you to say, no, this is my name above the door, and I want to make sure that everything goes out perfect, that makes total sense. So it's almost why it's so important not to compare what you're doing to what someone else is doing, because that person who really believes that they should cook all their own food before they eat it might not also have the ambition to build a world famous podcast. So it's so different. So we can just never compare what we're doing to what someone else is doing.
So speaking of maximizing and being very efficient, how do you think artificial intelligence and the ability to offboard our feelings, our opinions, and our work will impact us? So I'm thinking of something. There are a lot of people who think therapy is a waste of time, who maybe really need it. I was reading something from someone on the internet who was using ChatGPT for therapy, and she was talking to the AI bot, and she's like, okay, I need to work through this issue I have from my parents. My parents went through a divorce. You're going to give me advice in the style of, and then she used a famous therapist / coach, and she just went through it. She feels like she was efficient, but you know, she's not a professional. The AI is not a professional. I can't take the feeling that there is some deep work that is not going to get done if we outsource all the things we personally don't feel are important to AI. There could be something that's really important for us to do we personally don't feel like is important. We're in AI, we're in a bubble, we might not ever see that. What do you think about that?
I feel like when making any change, the most important thing is intention. So in the example you gave, the person that used ChatGPT as a therapist, forgetting anything about how effective ChatGPT is as a therapist, the thing that that person had was intention. So they had an intention to change, and that's powerful. So they had the intention to change. They used ChatGPT as a tool to create that change and then said it worked or said it was effective. But I like to think that because their intention was so strong, if they had have thought, ah, oh, ChatGPT wasn't effective at this, they would have used another tool. And that other tool might have been an app, a person, a book, a podcast, something else. But because they had the intention, they would have got there in the end. So if AI can be a stepping stone to someone with intention making real, genuine change, I am all for that. And if it provides, if the interface of a AI coach or ChatGPT or whatever AI tool you're using, if that interface provides a safe space to let someone take that first step to then assess and then regroup and then maybe make small changes, but maybe not big deep work changes, but then now they feel confident that they can take the next step, I think that's actually a really, really positive net outcome for that individual and potentially for society as a whole.
Yeah, I like that. As you were saying that, I was just thinking, you know, I have such a strong reaction to people using AI for things and potentially displacing jobs, but effectively it's no different than using a podcast as a therapist or meditation tapes or something, which people do find useful also. So why does AI feel so like uncanny valley to me now? Why do I feel such an immense sense of unease with all AI products? I wonder. On a question for you, that's like a personal reflection question. What would you say to someone who looks at these products, which are very innovative, could really do great things for humanity? I mean, the potential of artificial intelligence is incredible. We could solve climate change, we could solve diseases, we could do so much great work with it. And yet looking at it, I know it sounds crazy, it's weird, but sometimes I see stuff like this and I just want to vomit. When I see stuff where it's like the Bumble AI version of yourself, I'm like, I don't want to get anywhere near that. I would rather delete all my dating app accounts than I would have my being used in that way. What would you say to someone who shares my sentiments?
I think things are scary when they're unknown. So I would say learn more about it. I wouldn't necessarily say just blindly sign up to the Bumble thing or the tool thing or whatever else is put in front of you. But I would say explore the technology behind it. I think somewhere on Bumble's site, for example, just because we're using that example, they'll have an explainer of how the technology works, of how they do it. And I think that would be fascinating to learn about. So with anyone who is like not sure about anything AI related, I would say learn more about it, because ultimately, whenever in society there's like an expansion, there are people who expand with it and there are people who contract in fear and they maybe turn a blind eye or they go, no, that's not for me. But if it's happening anyway, you might as well know what's happening. And if you approach it with the mindset of, I'm really skeptical about this, but I want to learn so that I don't get tricked or so I don't fall into any of the pitfalls, I think it could be a very exciting, enlightening, potentially even rewardful experience. So one example is I wrote an article fairly recently called 6 Giveaway Signs of ChatGPT Content. And it was all the phrases that it uses, just kind of ChatGPT-isms. So if you know them, you can just spot it a mile off. You can be like, oh, ChatGPT wrote that. And then you don't need to be scared of it. It's just like, oh, that's obvious. It's a fake. But then if you didn't read that article and if you don't know what those things are, then you're just seeing all this stuff on the internet and you're like, oh my goodness, what's fake news? What's real? What did a person write? What did a machine write? And then you're just completely in the dark. So I think take away the fear by getting more familiar with it. And then at least when you have opinions on stuff, it's because it's from a place of just education, full awareness, and getting to the stage where nothing can scare you. Like, you should have the power, not AI.
Okay, Jody, I know we're coming up on time, but I do have one final question for you. Do you ever think that there will be a time in which AI has power over us?
I rewatched The Matrix fairly recently. And I feel like everyone should rewatch The Matrix because it's so applicable now more than ever. Of all the species that are on the Earth right now, there's hardly any compared to all that have ever been. And I think I read somewhere the other day in a book, the full book, not the Spark Notes, that the idea that humans will be exempt from becoming extinct is just ridiculous. Like, all other species have become extinct at some point. Of course humans will at some point, and maybe it's artificial intelligence that will cause it. I don't know. But at the same time, what are we going to do? You're not going to stop it. I'm not going to stop it. All we need to do is fulfill our own destinies and use AI as a tool and have all the awareness to mean that it doesn't use us as a tool. I feel like that's all we can do as human beings sitting on this sofa in Austin having a chat.
Something tells me that the next time I see you, you're going to be half robot. Thanks for coming on my show, Jody. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been the most amazing discussion. I've gone into the deepest, darkest depths of my brain and pulled out answers that I didn't even know where they came from. So thank you very much for all the insightful questions that led to that.